Jema. So we take up as the continuation of the series on education, and we want to go slow because education is a very important topic. Actually, if there is another substitute for yoga, it is education. By substitute, I mean in spiritual life we use the word yoga for evolution, but in secular life, or you know, in general, the word is education, because just as spirituality brings out the highest, the noblest, the best part in us, similarly, education is meant to bring out, educe that which is best in us. Just as highest spirituality is to be in the service of God, by definition, education means to bring out the best and put it at for its noblest use. And this is important because what we are going to read today, that imagine education which develops your mind, intelligence, you get 98%, 99%, I don't know what is the cutoff point today, nowadays 101% probably, if that is possible. So whatever it is, some faculties of the mind develop. Now, a highly developed mind and a crude vital, what is it? It's an asura, full bloom asura. That's what Harvard makes. I'm not talking of Harvard, but Harvard-like institutions are there. Extreme capacity to analyze, but vital remains completely unrefined. So this is one thing we have to understand, that just mental development is not healthy. And so what are the other parts other than the mind? Most of us don't even bother about it. For instance, about the heart and emotions. Most parents, teachers don't even look at this aspect. According to them, well, emotions are a problem, don't talk about it. Love is a dangerous thing. And because there is a thing in the mind about the idea about love, instead of learning to channelize, refine, even divinize these powerful levers of human existence. In fact, love is the most powerful lever of human existence if we look at it. I mean, there have been battles fought for love, lost for love, won for love. Ramayana and Mahabharata can be understood that way. Trojan War, entirely fought, changed civilization because of love. And yet, we have no clue about this energy. Then there is the vital force, the energy within us. And while we talk about clean energy in the environment, we need to understand that this is the source of energy, whether it's clean or unclean. And then the body, which is the instrument. So we can take it as a continuum. This image I have used earlier, but it's worth remembering. So the body is like a vehicle. You can take as a car or something, whatever. And then the vital is the energy feeder. And the mind is the person who is driving the car. He's the manager of the car. He's the driver who has to take care of the car. And then the owner of the car who is traveling through it is the soul. So this is how when we look at it. Now, should the body of the car be weak? And no, it should be strong, capable of carrying the master long distances without breaking down. It should be comfortable. It should be healthy, strong, all these things. What about energy? Is it okay that the car goes with great speed and throws away a lot of smoke and a lot of noise pollution? No. Ideally, it should go like, I don't know, I don't see much advertisement of the cars, but it should be a smooth energy, preferably a clean energy. And then, of course, we have the mind, which is the manager, should be a good manager, able to understand what the owner's intention is, where the owner wants to take me. And if every time he has to keep asking and the owner has to keep telling him, and every time if he's taking the car in all kinds of directions, it's going to be a chaotic life. So these are the three elements, physical, vital and mental. And in spiritual understanding, they are the instruments of the soul. And the psychic being is the owner. And this owner itself has been given this on trust by the higher spiritual and supramental consciousness. So when we understand this way, it becomes very easy. So we have to develop the instrumental nature. Very often people disconnect the two. So people think spirituality has nothing to do with the development of the body, development of the mind, development of the vital. But if the spiritual consciousness is developed, but the mind is not strong and good instrument, if the vital is not very pure, it's full of all kinds of crudeness, if the body is not strong, then you may have wonderful experiences, but you can't express them or manifest anything of that in life. Your experiences are good for you, but not for anybody else. So there are so many instances of this. For example, Swami Vivekananda, what a wonderful instrument. So there were people who were quite realized. It's not that he was the only realized person, but he became a wonderful instrument. So the need of a strong and supple instrument is very important. That's why Shri Krishna asks Arjuna to prepare himself for the war. Because if the instrument is not ready, while the divine can do things by himself, but the Vijayashri is guaranteed only when there is the meeting of Nar and the Narayana. So Nar is the human instrument and Narayana is of course the divine. Where they come together, as the Gita tells us, there is victory. So that's why we have to develop the physical, vital, mental instrument. And then bring out the soul. And then the soul itself must further connect to higher regions. This is the basic. So now what about the physical? Everything that we experience in this material world, ultimately to manifest, it must use the physical. That's a fundamental thing. So if I have beautiful intuitive insights and revelations, but if I have to express it, mouth is the instrument. The mouth, along with that, the brain, which will first receive that. And then the nervous system. If people who open to the spiritual light know that it can be very unsettling when it enters into the brain. Literally, the fuse may be blown off because brain has evolved into a certain kind of operating system. It yet doesn't have pathways for these higher energies to act, higher forces to act. So those pathways have to develop. And similarly, if you have to type, see, Sri Aurobindo was keeping awake whole night and then he was typing, and whatever work you are doing, manifesting the spirit requires, manifesting the mind requires, manifesting even love requires, manifesting your vital energy requires, ultimately the physical is the end point. So if the body is weak, then forget about other things. So that's why it is this adage Sri Aurobindo reminds in one of his later writings in 1949. Because when in the ashram physical education began, then people thought, oh, we are moving away from our purpose because we are a spiritual organization. So why there is so much attention given to physical education? So the mother, as always, she asked the Lord to write some articles. So Sri Aurobindo wrote. They got published in the bulletin of Center of Education, and now they are all compiled under the supramental manifestation. Last articles of Sri Aurobindo. So you can imagine its impact. And he starts by quoting one of the adages that, what did our ancient say? Sarira madhyam khalu dharma sadhanam. The body is the means for the fulfillment of dharma. You may have any amount of debate and discussion on dharma and adharma, but if your body is weak, so body has to be trained, made capable and become strong. And in that, mother gives us a few points, and we'll quickly go through these things about the physical education. So we'll go step by step. Let's see what we can do today, and we'll keep continuing it. So these are three chapters on physical, vital, mental education, and then there is the psychic education. So in physical education, she says that body works well through training and habit. It's something we need to understand. Mind moves in a different domain. Though even mind can be, as they say, brainwashed. But that's not what is meant. For body, habit and training. Because what enters the physical is very difficult to change. That's why they say, use this adage, doing is remembering. Some people don't understand it. So they often say, you know, you have to go there. Okay, walk straight, then second left to turn, then take a right turn, this, that. By the time, mind is like a fluid domain. It's all. Though it should develop the capacity of memory, and we'll come to that later. You may have all the keyboard in front of you, but it's only when you begin to type that memory goes into the cells. And once the body remembers, it is something solid. It applies even in illness. Body remembers that, oh, I was ill. When I went to Pondicherry in summer, it was very hot and I almost had a heat stroke. So what happens? Well, nobody gets heat stroke here, okay? By the way, I must say. Mother is going to say something very interesting. She says to walk an hour in the sun is a cure to many illnesses. Sunlight heals. Yes. That also, she says, make friends with the sun, and she says, uses it as a cure for many illnesses. So walk in the sun. People will think you are mad, it's okay. So only mad people do something worthwhile. So this physical body, we have to understand that we have to lay the habits. When these habits have to be laid? Preferably as a child. So what are these habits? Make a rhythm. One of the things which our generation was very happy, is happy about, is that our parents laid habits. Subha utke, go to washroom, do this, take a bath. So now it's got so much into the system that even in the cold of Leh Ladakh, I have to take a bath. And it's so nice, you feel so fresh. It itself makes your body in a kind of rhythm. And there are several rhythms in the body. Eating at a time when you feel, automatically after some time you begin to feel hungry at that point of time. You should not be rigidly bound to it, but at the same time it helps the body to train and discipline. Sleep wakeful cycle, you sleep around 10:30, wake up around 5:15. It's a very good time because all the sleep and waking hormones are active. The body has made this cycle because around 10:15 something, as the sun has totally gone down the horizon. So automatically the body releases hormones which are helping us to sleep. And morning by 5:15, as the birds get up, so there's a natural alarm. It is kind of the waking hormones are starting. Now when we disrupt this cycle, of course we can make new cycles. But then each of this cycle is linked to every other cycle. That's the other problem. Because body is a very delicately tuned machine where every system is interconnected with every other system. Jagatyam jagat. So if you break one cycle, then other things also have to be tuned. It's not just about sleep and wakefulness. It's about hunger. Why? Because your juices are being secreted. Your brain is working in a certain way. So all these have to be considered, and it's best if the foundations are laid during childhood. And who can lay it? Only when parents are showing a living example. A father who is getting up at 11 cannot tell his child, I told you, you have to get up at 7 and get ready for the class. It doesn't work because children are like X-ray machines. So she reminds us that habit. So there are three aspects, she says, control and discipline of the functioning of the body. This number one. So this is where Shobhinda even takes it in 1949 talks. And he says you should be able to bring every aspect of the body first under the control of the mind. And then under the higher control. And it can go to any extent. You see, your heart is beating fast. What does the remedy? Mother suggests. She says, tell your heart to calm down. Quiet, quiet, quiet. Stay quiet. And the mind has such a power, it can give a suggestion, the heart can begin to slow down on everything. So this is the other aspect, that control of the functioning of the body. Sometimes you have to go through odd times, like when I have to travel zones. And so I just use this mental suggestion. This is a time when I have to go for my wash. And body must listen, you know, it listens. It's otherwise, it'll be so terrible. You are kind of, whole thing is confused. So control and regulation for this, one of the simplest things is be on time. This itself is a very good exercise to ensure that there is a certain degree of mastery on the on nature as well as on the body. The second is an integral, methodical and harmonious development of all the parts and movements of the body. A simple way to do is stretching, so that all the parts are involved. So one of the things that the mother has suggested in the morning when you get up, and it's a natural tendency, isn't it? To stretch your whole body system, see? Whole, it must open up to, we don't have to do complicated exercises. Just 1 minute stretch so that the body, and time to time stretch. While sitting in the office, something you're doing, just stretch. It opens up, because otherwise body is glued in a posture. So just this act of stretching the body time to time, all the parts know, okay, okay, we are also there. Otherwise, like children in the classroom, they say, sir, you are only teaching this child called mind. You are not bothered about us. Brain is your only favorite student. You have to tell the hands and feet, yes, I know you are also there. Time to time, this stretching, blinking of the eyes, so that all these organs get their own exercise. Then third is correction of any defects and deformities. And she says it is best to learn good habits in the childhood, because children are very supple, they learn it. But then if I have not learned, what do I do? Well, it's never too early to learn. It's never too late to learn. So it's never too early to begin, never too late to learn. So that's the good news. Then another very interesting thing, because this whole system is interconnected. At one place, mother gives a sutra regarding illness. Desires irritate the organs. So when I read it, I said, oh my God, this is a profound truth. Why? Because you desire something, and see all the corresponding organs, whether it's desire for food, whether it's desire for sex, whether it's desire for money, you see the different parts of nature, and fear that accompanies desire, there are different parts which become active. Because these organs are unfortunately at the mercy of the vital. It's very sad. Body is docile, she says, it's a docile instrument. So whoever drives it with a whiplash, it gets driven. So there are people who are driven by the vital, extremely restless. So they will just go like a little monkey here and there. So that's not a very healthy way, because if the body does that, it gets tired, exhausted. So always one has to learn to master it. And so she says that first thing is to teach him to distinguish his desires from his needs. He should be helped to develop a taste for food that is simple and healthy, substantial and appetizing, but free from any useless complications. So this is a basic thing. And regarding to food, mother gives few more hints that with regard to food, it is not just what we eat. It's not about egg or vegan. All these are, again, mind's notions. And if you have a very strong mental notion, then it begins to act upon the body. Those who want to have notions, it's okay. It's each one's problem. But it's simple, healthy food. One of the classic examples is the ashram food. You have food which is nourishing, substantial. Time to time, they give side dish and vegetables also. Which is okay. Don't think ashramites are having only bland food, okay? People ask, oh, how good... Because vegetables are grown in the garden and they are also made. So it should be basically, you should be happy about having it, but you shouldn't feel overloaded. And that's where she says, reminds us. And then another important thing is the occult atmosphere that the food brings. So who is cooking it, and where it is prepared, where it is being eaten. In an atmosphere of lot of animated discussions in the ashram, there is a room of silence in the dining room. So those who want to avoid all this can sit here. And sometimes people don't understand. So when they are eating in the dining room upstairs, they begin to laugh and joke, and they don't know it's not a restaurant. So when they do it, one of the, more, what shall I say, rigid persons, but disciplined person comes and says, scolds you. So you feel your ego is hurt. But leave aside the ego and think about it. That the person is not saying something wrong in principle. Har jagah ki maryada hoti hai. Dining room has its own maryada. But actually it's a very good practice to implement. No, because there is a common problem. People don't understand. Why did he come and scold me? I said, because you deserve the scolding. Oh, what is there? I mean, because you have grown up, nobody will scold you. There is always somebody more grown up than you. Then I give a very, this is something which is not palatable. So I gave a different example. I said, you know, one of the good things about ashram is that anybody can scold you. Huh? What is good about it? I said, every time somebody scolds me, I feel I am like a child. Because only children are scolded. So, here anybody can scold you. I can tell you. A 40-year-old person may tell a 60-year-old person, why are you doing like this? So you say, what is wrong with it? And then you realize, oh, he thinks I am a baby. So it's good to believe you are a baby. I am happy being a child. Well, always when, forget the, as they say, don't shoot the messenger, look at the message. So, it may be in not a very pleasant language because many of people don't have a social consciousness. That's okay. I mean, there are people who have come from different backgrounds. Some come from very rustic background. But see whether they are saying something true or not. So I know another ashram where they gave dosa or something like that. And it was difficult to eat, you know, because they have served a helping, which is too much. And we have learned that take as much as you can eat and eat as much as you can digest. So I sat quietly and there is a man who is coming and staring at me. So people who belong to the ashram and they don't know how to tell me. So they quietly, I mean, I am their son-in-law, okay. So then, after some time, my wife told me, he is staring at you because if you don't finish it, he is going to stand. So I said, okay, so I have to use my chaturai. So I started eating. It went away and I said, now dispose it of whatever. It's too much. So this is the basic idea, is that basically don't go by, you know, the atmosphere during eating should also be healthy. And also the person who cooks, that's why mother's food is non-replicable. I can vouchsafe for all the mothers of the world. And I'm sure my mom will be very happy about it. There is nothing which can replicate. Anybody can make any kind of food. But, I mean, with all due respect to all the wives, I'm sure they do their best. But mama's food is mama's food. It's something else is there. I don't know what is there, but there is that extra element. So we have forgotten all these things nowadays, which is so important. I'm not saying mother's food only. Papas can also cook and they will put the same love. So I'm not, you know, watery that only women should cook. Women, men, what? But cook and feed the child. There is such a joy, at least for first few years. So this is about food. So timing, how much to eat, atmosphere it brings, rather than getting into squibbles too much about as to veg, non-veg, the food has to be seen along the axis of sattva, rajas, tamas. These are the only three beautiful classifications given in the Gita. So there are food which are full of sattva gun. And very nice, their fruits, vegetables, luckily all the vegetarian food is sattugun. Then what is the food which is rajogun? Lot of spices, meat, all these, they increase the rajogun in the system. And non-veg food of course creates, if you eat chicken, your brain becomes like a chicken. I mean, you become chicken-hearted, so to say. And if you eat like lion's meat, you is not available, okay. If you eat the goat meat, you become like a goat. And if you eat, you know, so meat brings that element of fear, anger, which goes when you are cutting an animal, slaughtering an animal. It's a lot of fear and rage is pumped into the system. And that's not healthy. And there are some vikrat mansikta, what do you say, distorted mentality people who believe you have to slowly cut the meat. That's what is halal, by the way, if you don't know for information. So halal is halal versus jhatka. So you will see that in Sikh religion, jhatka is allowed but not halal. But in Muslim religion, halal is allowed. Now they use halal for every kind of thing. So halal is, why it is done? Because as the person bleeds, animal, all the blood goes and the thing becomes very more juicy or whatever. But just think about it, that how much pain and suffering is going to the animal. So that's why I make sure that whatever I'm buying in a market, if it's halal certified, I say no. Because people should understand this. I don't subscribe to this ideology. I don't take non-veg, but even other things. because the mansikta, the thought behind it, is very dark. So this is how all this comes in the same category. And then there is tamasic food, stale food, rotten food, sorry to say, refrigerated food. All this is part of the tamasic food, leftovers. So all these things are not very healthy. So that's what she says. And she says, never use food as a reward or punishment. To tell a boy, if you do this homework or if you behave like a good boy, I'll give you a chocolate. It's not a very nice way. Though I have myself received this reward while going for an eye surgery as a 9-year-old. And my father told me, beta, if you go through the surgery, you will get 4 pedas. So all through my mind was on the 4 pedas. And the moment the surgery was asked, I just asked, where are my pedas? So, but in general, I mean, this is poor dad had no other way, you know, how to make a child be ready to come under the scalpel. So, but this is the thing, that food should never be used as a reward or as a punishment. Food is meant for health. So this association should not come. And then she says that, you know, hygienic habits, and yes, this is very important. The child must be taught as early as possible that this does not work. What does not work? That he does not become more interesting by being ill, but rather the contrary. Otherwise, children get into this habit, I have a stomachache, I have a headache, I have this pain, that pain. And if parents start giving attention, then he feels that illness is something very desirable. It's good. No, wake up, get up. Of course, you have to know where things are crossing a line. But generally, if you ask me, 99.9%, I mean, fever and all this is a different thing altogether. But generally, the system has been made quite well. You will go through. And then people become obsessed with the idea of illness as they develop into adults, and they are always thinking of illness. Not very good. So you may, even when you have an illness, it doesn't mean that you have to be always cuddly. Sit down, read something, watch something. Just stay, be quiet, but not afraid. This fear is very dangerous. So children develop this kind of state. So fear should not be there. And illness is a means of attracting the attention and sympathy of the people around them. On no account should this pernicious tendency be encouraged. Children should therefore be taught that to be ill is a sign of weakness and inferiority, not of some virtue or sacrifice. And this is very common, especially if you have one child, or if, you know, both parents, they become overprotective. And it's not that you have to be harsh toward the child. Very lovingly, koi baat nahi hai, it's okay, it'll be fine, don't worry about it. You are a unique, oh, mera raja beta, oh, my hero warrior, you are born for doing mighty things. Kshatriya clan was brought up like that. If somebody got hurt and he was bleeding, he said, now you are initiated. You are ready for the battle. Life is a battle. So one has to be strong and healthy. And then, of course, you have to include all kinds of sports, outdoor games. And here mother says something very interesting. In the general program of the child's education, sports and outdoor games should be given a prominent place that more than all the medicines in the world will assure the child good health. And then she adds this, I use this as a Brahma Vakya. And hours moving about in the sun does more to cure weakness and even anemia than a whole arsenal of tonics. If you ask me, what is the proof? I say, mother has said so, as simple as that. And I actually practice it, not 1 hour, but 35 minutes like that at least. It's very good. And wherever possible, it's really nice. It helps. It invigorates the body. I don't know why it does, how it does, but it invigorates the body. And I do believe in future, we will heal with light and sound. I do believe that. That in future we learn how to, you know, canalize certain frequencies of light and clear the vessels. I don't know the technique or mechanism, but I do believe that we have not used light and sound, because they are the two first aspects of the divine. To the extent we should, we are still barbarians using a knife and cutting the abdomen and bitter pills we may not need. Hopefully, not hopefully, definitely, it's a question of time. And then she speaks of sleep. So how much sleep she advocates? Until maturity, it should not be less than 8 hours. And in most of the people, Sri Aurobindo would say 7 hours. So average sleep in an adult. Science says 6 to 9 hours. So there are people who need less sleep, 6 hours. It says minimum, six and a half. And maximum is 9 hours. Now one has to discover one's own sleep rhythm. If you sleep less than that, because sleep is a time when repair is taking place. Shakespeare's famous sentence that, you know, sleep that knits the raveled sleeve of care. So, you know, careworn life and all that. So during sleep, all the processes that are repairing, they are active. It's nature's mechanism. Vishwakarma's creation. So when we sleep, they become active. And they are doing all the overhauling. And oiling, greasing, wear, denting, painting, everything is going on. So if we allow sufficient sleep in a very relaxed environment, then it automatically, a lot of things are healed just by taking rest. So she says, 8 hours in a quiet, well-ventilated place. Obviously, if the television is going on or, a kind of podcast, somebody is listening without the earphones, plugs, then you ask the child to sleep, it's not very healthy. So you have to allow well-ventilated and at least a quiet place, 8 hours, good sleep. And as I was mentioning, the hours before midnight are the best for resting the nerves. Even during the waking hours, relaxation is indispensable for all who want to maintain their nervous balance. So that's why now there are studies that maybe even 20-25 minutes of a brief siesta post lunch, or just people call, use the word power nap, and whatever way, just letting go, relax. Many times not possible in office setup. So sit in the chair and just let go, let loose. I used to do this when it was not possible. So just sit in the chair and slowly, slowly just loosen all the muscles. You will go into a kind of mini nap. 10-15 minutes, it will relax you. So some kind of a rejuvenating of the nerves, it's important. Because just imagine, nerves are having constant traffic. And that's why flooding the mind, brain and nerves with all kinds of inputs through the senses is so harmful. So we don't realize it, that, you know, we are all the time flooding the mind. So in a quiet place, sleeping. And we had such a lovely system which we have forgotten. And that was Ma ki lori sunke suna. I don't know if somebody has actually experienced it. I have slept with my mom singing a bhajan and waking me up with a bhajan. And I even remember that tune. That bhajan was my alarm clock. And if I didn't get up, then of course she could become Durga, you are getting late for the school. But otherwise with some bhajan or telling some nice story, something very pleasant, beautiful to slip into sleep. If nothing else, music, some very nice music. So these are simple things. To know how to relax the muscles and the nerves is an art which should be taught to children when they are very young. There are many parents who, on the contrary, push their child to constant activity. When the child remains quiet, they imagine he is ill. And the mother is never in favor of asking children to do household activities. You have to do something. You are making him a jinn. You know, restless jinn. He wants to do something. And he says, give me work. I'm not saying if you want to do household activity, do it. But it should not be, that's why child labor is not good. Because that time the child is developing. I understand the economic dimension and other things. So always exceptions. But generally, it's a time of development. And during development, if he's not given sufficient rest, then the nervous system, all this develop in a very distorted manner. Nothing is worse for a developing nervous system which cannot stand the strain of too continuous an effort or of an activity that is imposed upon it and not freely chosen. So, these are some of our points. And finally, she says, I have said that from a young age, children should be taught to respect good health, physical strength and beauty and balance. The great importance of beauty must also be emphasized. A young child should aspire for beauty, not for the sake of pleasing others or winning their admiration, but for the love of beauty itself. For beauty is the ideal which all physical life must realize. And of course, this beauty is not just about, you know, look, good looks, because that varies. But there is a harmony of proportions. Beauty, if we go to its essence, like love, has something called as harmony. And that harmony of proportion doesn't matter. There are things which are genetic, you just can't help it. But at least if there is a harmony, if the child can be developed into that, that would be something. And our famous bhajan, which I keep recounting, love, I'm sure many of us love it. See how Lord Rama is described. Sri Ramachandra Kripalu Bhajamana Harana Bhavve Dharunam Navakanja Lochana Kanja Mukkar Kanja Pad Kanja Arunam Kandarpa Aganit Amit Chabi Nav Neela Neeraj Sundaram Patpita Manahum Tadita Ruchi Shuchi Naomi Janaka Sutavaram. And then goes, it describes even Ajanu Bhujishar Chapa Dhari Sangrama Jitkarjus. It describes his arms are long. That's how Lord Rama is described. Why? Beauty has no importance at all. It's because it has its place. Not for admiration or, you know, drawing people's attention, but it has its place in the scheme of things. And one should learn to appreciate it. Mother says in India, one of the problem things which was the handiwork of Asura is to shun beauty. And beauty is not just about body, in your surroundings, in the place where you are living, all these things. Beauty in your neighborhood. All this is an aspect of the education. Every human being has the possibility of establishing harmony. So this is what beauty is about, harmony among the different parts of his body and in the various movements of the body in action. Walking. Walking can be so beautiful. Sometimes, at least I have had occasion to see somebody walks. If you see from behind, there is a majestic gait. Arjuna is described like that. That as he is walking, there is a passage in Mahabharata. As Arjuna is walking, Chitrangada sees him walk and his gait is like a lion. Arjuna is Arjuna. He is also a dancer. So that gait, which is a gait of confidence. So all these simple things. Not like bowing the head like this and walking. Learn to look straight. These are simple things. That harmony of proportions. Every human body that undergoes a rational method of culture from the very beginning of its existence can realize its own harmony. So it's not like we have to look like somebody else and thus become fit to manifest beauty. And finally, she says, as word of hope, but if for any reason this physical education has not been given during childhood or even in youth, it can begin at any age and be pursued throughout life. So this for all of us, if we have not been exposed to this, it's so beautiful. Even aging can be so graceful. I've seen people with white hairs and wrinkles. One of that was that famous Hollywood actor whom Devanand used to imitate. I mean, Gary something. I'm forgetting his name. Really, he aged, even for that matter, Devanand. If you look at, you know, but there was a grace about aging. Aging can be graceful. So beauty is not about looking young and using fairness creams. It's not about that. It's not about color. There is a great beauty in Savra Salona. It's not about, it's about harmony. The whole body and mind, everything should be in a state of harmony with surroundings and within and without. So that's what the mother is hinting at. So body is the base, and a very important base. If it is weak or neglected, and of course she is not even mentioned here, but several places, putting beer and alcohol and all these things, it's just, imagine, it's an instrument to serve the divine. Smoking, drinking, putting all kinds of tons of things inside the body. What kind of damage? And then we want to do exercise, and there also we, everything should be in balance. Even exercises. This is the last thing which I must say as a doctor. I have seen several people nowadays, especially you will see young heart attacks. And you know why? They overdo things. They have this idea of treadmill, and they say very proudly, I have done my cardio. Be careful. People are selling machines. That's all. You must have heard about Raju Srivastava doing the cardio. Young fellow. Collapsed. Quite a few I know who collapsed like that. Why? Because they don't realize that basically you have to be healthy and strong. This over exercising a part, the body is not meant to take it. It's not like 5 kilometers is good, so 10 kilometers is better, and 15 kilometers is yet better, and 20 is close to best. No. There is an optimal level. Yes, from childhood, if you have done it, do it. In ashram, people do that. They train. Then you can, even for marathon, for example, you have to practice and get habituated. For climbing a mountain, you have to practice. So if you are doing that, it's fine. In a special way, you want to go methodically, slowly, slowly increase. But suddenly if you say that, no, running is good, so I'm going to, you know, suddenly heal my heart by running 10 kilometers, you're likely to get another attack. So be careful, and especially if one is doing it out of fear. So I have known people, with this little story I'll stop, who had come to me, known person, 60, and he had a heart attack, and he said, thin, not obese, left smoking decades back, does not drink, does everything right, and morning he would go on a 5 kilometer or 10 kilometer run and everything. I said, that's the problem. One is, you are doing it much more than what you should be doing. Second is that you are doing it with fear that there should be no illness. This fear. There is a difference between wanting to be healthy, and the other is, I don't want there should be heart attack. So basically the body gets confused. Probably the body was not even thinking that you will have a heart attack. But the body is getting this constant message. So it's very important. Of course, there are other factors. There is genetic, heredity, and plenty of factors. So not that one thing is like in the checklist will take care of everything. But the golden rule of physical body is moderation. Yuktahar viharasya. Eat in moderation. Drink water. And juices. Juices in moderation. Rest in moderation. And be healthy. Jai Maa.